More people have been tuned in over the last couple of months to news programs looking for the latest information on the coronavirus and an ever-changing landscape of guidelines, executive orders, and information. Next on Media Meet, we connect with local media leaders covering coronavirus, the challenges, the changes, and the impact on the industry. Welcome to Media Meet. I'm your host, Elizabeth Peterson. I'm here with you today from my living room. We're doing the show completely via Zoom, talking with members of the local media, the impact on journalists in the Upper Peninsula, how they've worked under a stay-at-home order, what it's been like covering a quickly changing situation with often very little information. We're joined via Zoom by TV6's morning anchor and assistant news director, Andrew Lacombe, Media Brew News Director Walt Lindela, and WJMN News Director Ben Raymond. I want to thank all of you for joining us. I really appreciate your time here today. So let's start back a few months ago now. You know, when reports of coronavirus cases started coming in, it was very slow at first, and then the information and the cases seemed to grow and change so quickly. What were those first couple of weeks like for all of you? And when did you realize covering something like this would be so unique?
Well, I'd have to say that for me, the first time I heard about it was I was actually in Lansing at the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. And at that particular day of seminars and meetings, they started talking about a virus or something. I said, don't shake hands for the rest of the conference. And we came back. And then that week following, we helped with the local Pigs and Heat charity hockey game. And the very next day, everything went into shutdown. And one of the challenges that we had was how rapidly everything closed down. And as things were closing, we were like, okay, we've got to adapt to this and we have to be ready for it. We started getting protocols from things like Michigan Association of Broadcasters and talking to other colleagues. And we had to utilize technology to send the majority of our staff to work from home. Luckily, we had that in place, and that was probably the biggest thing was suddenly everybody was working from home very quickly, except for a few of us, myself included.
For us, it was a memo from corporate. You know, we knew about coronavirus, you know, just barely in the U.S., but we got a memo from our company with a new travel policy and different guidelines for where we could and couldn't go and who we had to tell and quarantine. And it was completely a new language that's now obviously very common language. And it kind of caught us off guard. Like, was this, you know, what is this basically? And then within a matter of a few days, it became, you know, then it made its way to Michigan. And I remember that week when, you know, it was like election night in Michigan, and then the NBA situation and hit all the sports and the schools. And just in those like 3 or 4 days, everything shifted, and then it felt real. That what started as a corporate memo then actually, you know, was actually impacting our daily lives. And just like Walt said, you know, we had to maintain our operations for news while everything around us was changing, you know, so quickly, with, you know, people leaving the building, quickly getting them home, set up with equipment, and still trying to get information out there that was more important than ever. So a lot changed within a matter of days. That started with a memo that seemed, you know, just kind of out there and a surprise, and then it sunk in quickly.
And it was helpful getting a similar sense of guidance from there, but not all of it made sense at the time. Like, why are we doing this? Okay, wash your hands. We put up all the things, trying to find sanitizer, trying to find all these things, just like everybody else in the area. But when it really started to hit home of we need to do something differently was when, like you talked about the NBA, Andrew, but also when like the local high school started canceling their playoffs, when all of those just stopped and everything just put on full tilt halt. And we had to figure out who can work from home and which meetings could have been emails. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot, just like you said, very quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, at first there was this perception, and perhaps it exists to some degree in some areas, about the media over-dramatizing the situation, not reporting the facts, maybe making a mountain out of a molehill, if you will. So do you find that to be true here locally? And even if not, how does that national, you know, kind of leak over, and how do you handle those types of views and comments?
I'll start on this one. For the most part, we try to stay in our lane of, we are here to serve the Upper Peninsula community, and try to provide the best information in with the right amount of intelligence behind it. So not just putting out things because they've been made available, but looking at what is the relevance here, what is the context for it, and just sticking to what's right in front of us, trying to gather the information, even though in the beginning there wasn't a lot available, and not just, again, putting out content because it was there, and not being selective by holding back information and not overhyping it, but trying to find that intelligent middle ground of what do I need to know and what do my neighbors need to know.
Yeah, we were all in a tough position, I think, in the UP, because things blew up so quickly in Lower Michigan that, you know, the governor's orders came out fast, and we had to interpret them and then and get them out to everyone. And then there was no confirmation of a positive case for, I think, at least 2 weeks after Lower Michigan had its first case. And so, and there were a lot of rumors about cases happening in the UP, and you know, social media obviously stirred a lot of those, and we look into things and you know, have nothing to report in the end, and so it was kind of like we're waiting for it to there to be an outbreak here, and so I think that was you know, tough when you're hearing all this information around you, but what you have to report is, we have nothing, no confirmed cases here, but here are the rules, and this is why they're in place, and it shut down, you know, so much in the UP at what was going to be a busy time, you know, in March, people getting ready to go on spring break and lots of, you know, moving towards spring, and then everything stopped.
Yeah. And for us, it was really one of these active decisions that we made, that we were going to send basically everybody that could work at home, work at home. But we understood that in order to disseminate information, in a timely manner, because things were changing so quickly, we really had to have a couple of us stay on staff in the office. Myself as news director, my morning show partner, Mark Evans, who's also our market manager for our company, and then our production manager, who also does an air shift, were the main three that came in. And the reason we decided to do that was because it was such a fluid situation that if I did an interview with the health department or state officials or something on, let's say, Tuesday afternoon to air it on Wednesday, things could very quickly change. So that, combined with the need for the technology to do our interviews live and do them using our phones and some Zoom technology and everything, to make them effective and give the most accurate and up-to-date information, we decided that we were going to maintain a morning show on Sunny and local news on our network. And, you know, it seemed to work out pretty well, because we could get stuff in effect from the horse's mouth and put it on and get it out there. And I mean, there were days where I did an interview with somebody, whoever it was, an official, about all of this at 7:30 in the morning, and if I go to use it at noon in the noon news, the information, it would be relatively not the same and not the most up to date and not the most accurate. And that was one of the bigger challenges of covering this. And then, to answer kind of your original question about it, we really work to not get beholden or to get too scary about it. We tried to talk about it in a measured way, and also try to get the information out and where people could turn to find more information and not get caught up in the hype of it all, because to be responsible as a broadcaster, as a journalist, we should be trying to do that. And a lot of our listeners were being influenced by people just saying stuff on social media and everything, and at least we knew we could be turned to get the right info out.
And, well, I want to go back to something that you talked about, is with just how quickly information was changing, mm-hmm. you know, for all of you, you know, when you, there's not much advanced planning on these shows. You kind of have to go hour by hour almost. So how did that change your day-to-day operation? How did you all handle that to make sure whether you were going on at 8 a.m., 10 a.m., 6 p.m., that you had the most up-to-date information?
Well, for us, I mean, we were, you know, we're on the air 6 to 10 every weekday morning. We're doing live interviews most of the time in that morning show. I would set up interviews, you know, to have somebody join us. But I would say, all right, give me the latest that you've got. And we, you know, it may change between the time we set it up to have them on. But I guess we tried to maintain an air of consistency and stay on doing what we were already doing. We also did other elements of the show and continue to do them because there's also an entertainment factor in what I do on the morning show as opposed to what I do as the news director. So we knew that if we could give the listeners out there that are dealing with a lot of uncertainty in the world, if we gave them some certainty that they knew they could turn on the radio or turn on our live stream or our, you know, our online streaming of it, that at 7 o'clock, let's say in the morning, we had news and then we had a segment or an element that was normally there. And we did hear from a lot of our listeners that they appreciated that we were there, providing them a consistent source of news and entertainment that I know a lot of stations weren't able to do that for various reasons. And we felt that it was important for us to do it, and we feel that it was good for us to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Okay, for us, when everything started, I usually work in the mornings, so I'm usually gone by noon. And but within these couple of weeks when everything was really happening, I was working in the evening shift. And so we just kind of made some quick changes, you know, and I miss what was talking about, you know, providing that that lightheartedness to start people's day. And all of a sudden here I'm in the evening where, you know, stuff was happening at 4 o'clock, 4:30,
right, yeah,
changing throughout the evening news. So what we did is just devoted, you know, a few key people just to follow what the governor was saying, what the case numbers were, what the latest information from the health departments were, because, you know, that took just a few dedicated people just to monitor that and make sure that we had all our bases covered there. And that became, that's the role that Sophie Erber played for us for at least 2 months. I think she was always just tracking the numbers and the orders and the governor's press conferences, because that's, you know, that's where the big information kind of came out of, and that would usually happen at not the best time for us, you know, 4:30, 4:45, you got to do a newscast at 5 with, and it's got to have everything in it. So so we changed staff around with the people who were there, and then obviously just, you know, getting the people who are at home, making sure that they're okay, comfortable, and, you know, able to contribute to what we need. So there was just a lot of personnel changes, and just staying on top of what you kind of caught on after a few days when the big announcements were coming and what the pattern was, and you could kind of adjust your workflow accordingly.
Yeah, and for us, only having a 6 and 11 p.m. newscast, we weren't on quite as tight of deadlines as Andrew. So those, but they come up very quickly. So putting those systems in place of, like, what are the top few things that have changed today? What's changed since this morning? So you can just go through the bullet points, trying to disseminate that information and put it out there. But the big change for us came not just in our broadcast, but what we were doing in between, in providing just on our website, on social media, not trying to overload people, but when there was relevant information, when there were resources on unemployment, on testing, on all these other things, making that immediately available as soon as we had it so that people could have access to it, not trying to throw it all at them all the time. But again, like Walt said, finding a measured approach and a responsible way of delivering the information, but with that sense of urgency of things are constantly changing. We're trying to figure this out just as much as anybody else because we live here too. So it's just, it was always just trying to make sure, what are we getting out there? How fast do we need to put it out? And also we were able to utilize some of our sister stations in Lansing, in Grand Rapids, and in Green Bay, having access to different lawmakers, to people in different positions, to get a better scope and scale and try to add perspective to what we're putting out and applying up here.
And, you know, for 2 months, people's habits, their routines, they really changed a lot. So maybe if they drove in every morning listening to Mark and Walt, now they were at home, maybe just getting their day started. Did you find that you were, you know, addressing your audience differently, that they were responding differently? And on the other side, you know, 6 o'clock news, or just news in general, maybe has more, had more viewers than typical. So what did you see happening there?
To answer that directly, I would say that, you know, we know that in the morning, a majority of our listeners are people in their cars. And we know that our online listening went up considerably, meaning that people were at home and they may not have an actual radio in their house, but, you know, with their computer, they could still tune in. Our statistics showed that people, while they were homebound, were listening online a lot more. But by trying to deliver that overall sort of the same routine, I don't think we really lost anybody. If anything, we gained people because they may have had time to listen longer. Maybe they had time to take part in more things. You know, we were still doing call-in segments and some giveaways and contests. And, you know, when I say contests, I mean like just sort of small giveaway type things that are part and parcel of doing a morning radio show. But I don't really feel like it changed, other than we knew there were people streaming, and actually people streaming around the country that were from the area that may have been the snowbirds, so to speak, or the people that were staying in Florida or something like that. And then it got stuck there, right? So on air was probably dropped, and I would say that our streaming definitely picked up.
For us, I would say our early evening newscast, definitely the live viewership there. People are now suddenly home at 5, 6, and 7 p.m., so they're definitely watching. I think on both ends, the late news and the morning news, people are probably sleeping a little bit more. And if they're working from home, they can get up and go start their day. They can cut a few hours off their morning routine. So I think we definitely started addressing more of our morning newscast to the frontline workers, the people who were, you know, had to get out and go, the people going to the grocery store, people going to the hospital, you know, the people who still had to go out. We had a couple snowstorms in the middle of this too. And, you know, so it's like, oh, we have something else to talk about now, but it's not going to make your day any easier. So we adjusted, we did some different newscasts, if you will, on Facebook at different times that were targeted just for those audiences that maybe slept in or were going to bed earlier, so we could put the content in a Facebook newscast that looks like a TV6 news product, but was just geared for Facebook.
Yeah. And, you know, we were feeling it just like I think a lot of people were. Just there was so much information all at once that you can't help but feel a little fatigued by all of it, where you want to know information because there's so much that's unknown. But at the same time, it's a lot to take in. So as we move forward, still trying to provide that information, but also finding some of those moments of who's still doing good out there, what are the good things that are happening in our community that while people can't be connected, how can we still help people feel like they can see their neighbors, like they can interact with people? So trying to find some of those stories and trying to help people feel like they aren't alone, even though they couldn't leave their homes a lot or just weren't having the social interaction that they had been before. So that was something we had been doing before, but just taking a renewed focus on that of, you know, if we're feeling these ways, trying to be cognizant of how everybody else is doing.
Sure. And, you know, have you had time to reflect back kind of on the last couple of months and what you all went through and how it will maybe change you, change the way you look at covering different issues or stories? Have you had any thoughts on that or time to reflect?
Well, it's still going on. So my answer is to a certain extent. And when Andrew, I just occurred to me that when Andrew said like that they changed the morning news content into the frontliners that were moving at that time, we did that too. But I never really even thought about it till now. I think that as this dust settles and we're starting to come out of this a little bit more, yes, we will. I can tell you that the technology that we're utilizing, such as Zoom, has changed a lot of how we're going to be doing news coverage and interviews from this point forward, because it can increase audio quality. It can add a video factor that we don't normally have in radio. So I think that that would probably be the biggest change. But no, there hasn't been time to really reflect because it's still going on.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't reflected much besides just personally, you know, just the things maybe I took for granted before living here. You know, you go out and you see your neighbors and family and friends every day, and now you see them in different ways. But I think news-wise, you know, the interaction with the viewers, you know, seeing them out in the stores or, you know, running into them at community events, you know, we're kind of missing that now. But I would say I've heard a lot more from viewers who are calling and emailing and Facebook messaging us with all kinds of comments, whether it's a compliment or some good, honest questions they want us to look into, or a complaint about something they heard us say. I think we have seen a huge increase in that viewer feedback. And that's good to know that, you know, that one, people are comfortable to reach out to us and tell us what they want to hear, what they want to know about, because, you know, we can't think of everything that people want to know about right now. And so it's great to hear from those people, but not face to face, like you're used to running into people all over the place when you're out and about, you know. So that's a change, but it's nice that people are very you know, feel like they are able to reach out to us and tell us what they're thinking.
Yeah. Production value has been a big thing. Like what we're doing right now, being able to do a Zoom call or all of our interviews, that this is now an acceptable form of having conversations or storytelling, that it's not always we have to drive 2.5 hours in one direction. We can tell meaningful stories, talk to people from Ironwood to over in the Sioux up to the Keweenaw and Escanaba all in the same day and not leave our chair. So we're able to do a better service, I feel like, to the community. But it would be nice to come and see people physically. So it'll be nice to get back to that. But having the availability to do things like this definitely is a change that I think will stick around.
Go ahead.
I was going to say one thing on that note, you know, doing these extended interviews, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of news agencies kind of give the newsmakers more time right now because they have so much to say and kind of know at least the direction things are going from the order standpoint. They may not know the future with the science, but they know what the rules are going to be like. And so I think, you know, we gave a lot more time to the governor, obviously doing a lot of extended interviews with her, our health department, our state reps and senators and those kind of people, because people just wanted to hear it straight from their mouths. And I think that was crucial for all of us to give them that chance, because that got information out directly that people wanted to hear.
Yeah, certainly. We have about 5 minutes left. You know, when you guys kind of look at or think about the people that you talked with, the stories that you shared, is there anything in particular that inspired you, that kind of kept you moving? Any one person or any one story?
Wow. Well, I think that probably the thing that was most impressive to me was the way that there were members of our community that stepped up to help out. If it was a fundraiser, if it was making masks, if it was, you know, working with the shut-in population of the senior homes or things along like those lines, I thought that people really stepped up in our community and around the state, but really here in the UP, it seemed like there was a definite push to get out and be able to help in whatever way they could. Since we couldn't go anywhere, we did things from home, and people getting together and sewing masks in particular is something that really stuck with me. But there was just an overall attitude, it seemed like, that if there was a way to offer support online or offer support by doing something at home and then shipping the things off to the people that need them, that really happened. And that was very heartening here in our community.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly saw the mask. I think really stands out to me too. I know, like, I had family members involved in that, and that was just, you know, just a great example of people, you know, stepping up and in our situations having to have the ability to get that information out there. What do the mask groups need right now, and who's doing it? Where, how can you get more information to help? Like, that just made, you know, made me feel empowered and want to keep going and keep going to work on those dark mornings when it was just, you know, just a few of us going in. And, you know, like, what has changed in the world so much, but at the same time, nothing, because, you know, it's just the same routine day after day. So I think, you know, that was what drove me, and just, you know, getting those phone calls from people who say, you know, oh, you know, that maybe in normal times they don't see many people, but they start their day watching us and they love getting mm-hmm. their weather and news every morning. And, you know, the fact that we're still there kind of giving them that interaction to make their day a little better, I think still, you know, makes me realize really why I like this job and choose to do it.
Mm-hmm. And just on top of all those other things, the hearts of hope. Just going into any community or just out in your neighborhood and seeing just those little reminders, the messages in the windows that helped keep us connected when we couldn't be, of just all the little things that were going on behind the scenes of people helping keep other people fed, of taking care of each other in ways that we didn't even know were possible. But just seeing those little hearts, those little reminders, was just a really incredible thing. And they haven't come down because we're still in this, but they're a great reminder that we have an incredible community that we live in.
Yeah, and I do anticipate those will be in windows for a long time, but you're right. They do give you a special feeling when you're going for a walk or even just driving around a community. It's a nice thing to look at. Well, that is all the time that we have for today. As you guys talked about, being able to get together again is going to be great. I can't wait to have you back on the set around a table, but I mean, I'll take this over Zoom. It's always good to see your faces, and I just want to commend you for all that you're doing. I've watched more news than I have probably ever in my life, and I'm a news junkie, but you all are doing a great job, and I know I speak for so many when I say, you know, it's very much appreciated, and keep it up. And I also want to thank those that are watching and listening on public radio. For WNMU, I'm Elizabeth Peterson. Stay safe.
The preceding program was produced by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television, in studios located in Elizabeth and Edgar Hardin Hall.